First, over the past several months, and especially since last week's election, conservatives have been flocking to social media platforms more in line with their thinking. They say Twitter and Facebook have suppressed their freedom of speech by blocking or labeling posts from President Trump and his supporters that contain unsubstantiated claims. Facebook and Twitter say they're trying to limit the spread of misinformation. One alternative platform, Parler, says in its community guidelines that it won't decide what content would be removed or filtered based on the opinion expressed in a post. Since Monday of this week, Parler has been the most downloaded free app through Apple's App Store and Google Play. Among those taking to Parler and other sites like MeWe, Gab, and Rumble are extreme right-wing groups like Proud Boys and neo-Nazis that spread conspiracy theories, racist memes, and other toxic content. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you use any of these more conservative-leaning social media outlets? What kind of things do you see there? Do you think Facebook and Twitter are right to label or limit the reach of what it considers a fake news or misinformation, or do you think that's an overreach? What kind of policing, if any, do you think social media platforms should have? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Libby Hemphill is an associate professor at the University of Michigan School of Information. Her research areas include social media, political communication, and civic engagement. Libby, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Can you give us a sense of the players here, the sites that are, I think, are not new? They've been around in some cases for a couple of years now. But tell us, what are some of the sites that are getting more attention after Election Day?
Sure. I think the site that's getting the most attention after Election Day is Parler, which is pitching itself sort of as a Twitter replacement. But some other players in the space here are MeWe, which is a sort of anti-Facebook platform, Rumble, potentially Gab, though I haven't heard as much about that lately. They were more a couple of years ago, but alternatives to YouTube and Twitter and Facebook, with Parler the biggest player this week.
How much of a move do you see to these sites in the week since the election?
So I think that the growth numbers that the sites are reporting are quite high, but I think it's kind of a misnomer to say move, because one of the things that's true about social media is that your use can be additive. So you don't have to leave Facebook to join MeWe, and you don't have to leave Twitter to join Parler. You can be on all of them. So it's more of an expansion than a move. Though there are some folks pitching an exit from Facebook for tomorrow, as I understand it. So maybe that will be a movement. But I see it more as folks are adding an additional platform more than they're moving from one to another.
And while a lot of these things are being downloaded now, maybe in part by conservatives looking to add or move, and I think a lot from journalists looking to see what's happening on these sites, and probably researchers too, when you look at the scale of Twitter and especially of Facebook, are we talking about big numbers here?
No, not at all. I think so there were 2.7 billion active Facebook users last month. And the biggest max exit event that I could find had about 75,000 people. That's really nothing to Facebook. It's not even a meaningful fraction of a percent of the folks on Facebook. And when you talk about even 700,000 users moving at a time, that starts to get interesting, but it's not threatening to Facebook or to Twitter anyway.
Talking to Libby Hemphill with the University of Michigan School of Information, looking at alternative social media sites, some billing themselves explicitly as more conservative sites, inviting people to add them into their mix instead of Facebook or Twitter, or maybe make the move entirely. You could join in at 800-642-1234 with your thoughts about these sites, or your experiences if you've checked them out, and your thoughts on the role of social media platforms like the Facebooks and Twitters and more. When it comes to the spread of information, should they be flagging stories? Should they be blocking the spread of stories? Join in at 800-642-1234. And Libby, let's get to that question about the role of Facebook and Twitter in the spread of misinformation, a big topic. What role do you think they should be playing in the midst of this post-election time?
Mm-hmm. I think that the size and scale and speed with which information travels on those platforms mean that their responsibilities are different, and that Facebook and Twitter do have responsibility to help their users be critical consumers of the information that they encounter. I think that the flagging, especially on Twitter, has sort of become more of a story than the flag, than the content that was flagged itself, which is kind of interesting post-election. But I think that they are designed, both Twitter and Facebook, for information to spread really quickly, that it's hard to get that back. That sort of once something is out there and it's moving, it's very hard to correct it. And so they're taking some initiative by doing the flagging. But I think that if their goal is to reduce the spread, it would be better to make it harder to spread in the first place. But I do think that they have a responsibility here because of their scale and the scope of users and content that travel on their platforms.
Right. One worst case scenario happened with Facebook in particular in the country of Myanmar, where the government and the military in particular had this long running Facebook campaign that they ultimately used to incite and organize a genocide, basically. I mean, how much does that weigh on the minds of a company like Facebook? Like, how do we make sure this doesn't happen on our platform again?
I mean, I think the answer to your question about how much does that weigh is not enough. I think that Facebook hasn't yet really reckoned with what their role was in that state-sponsored genocide. And I think that they're struggling now with the misinformation around election results in the US to understand just how much impact does content that travels on their platform have on our democracy. And I think that there's some hubris that still remains that makes it hard for them to see just how much damage can be done both to democratic institutions and to people and their bodies in the case that you mentioned.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Sandy is with us in Dubuque. Sandy, hello.
Hello.
What did you want to bring up, Sandy?
On this issue of censorship of places like Twitter and Facebook, the average reading level of the average American at one point was only like the fourth grade level, possibly fifth. So I believe that it's imperative that what you put out there for people to read is the absolute truth. It's not something that you can fool with and have, you know, an educated public.
Sandy, thanks a lot for the call. And I think the people critical of Twitter and Facebook would, of course, disagree with Sandy. They say, hold on, we're grownups. We can evaluate claims ourselves. We shouldn't have our hands held by social media companies. How do we square those two arguments, Libby?
So I think you're right that they would respond with, I don't need a company telling me the truth or how to read something. But I think that the evidence suggests that they do, that people are getting a lot wrong and misunderstanding how voting and elections work in the US, for instance. And so the evidence suggests that folks do need someone helping them interpret the information that they're encountering. And, you know, I don't like to be corrected any more than anybody else does. But it's important that we recognize sometimes when we're wrong or when we've got outdated information. And I think Sandy's comment about reading level is interesting because it is hard for us to understand both the information and the flag. And so sort of watching how they change the wording on these misinformation flags and how they try to be more clear about what does it mean so that folks can understand really quickly what does it mean to flag what the president has said, for instance, as misleading or that it misrepresents something has been interesting to watch evolve.
One of the trickiest things here, though, is that there are a lot of statements like if I say this change to tax policy, whatever it might be, is going to boost jobs. Probably we can go back and forth with dueling data and make a case in either direction. Where do we draw the line between, you know, opinion that you can debate versus just flat out falsehood that a Twitter or Facebook should take action on?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. And it's something that we are trying to figure out. At the School of Information, we have a study where we're trying to determine sort of what actions do folks want platforms to take and what ones would make sense, where removing is an option, flagging in the way that we've seen is an option. And I don't know, Rob, if we have an answer yet, except do something. But what that something is and how heavy-handed it ought to be is still unknown. And I think your tax policy example is a great one, because that's tax policy is pretty complicated. And so there isn't an easy answer to what is true or false in that case.
We're looking at the rise in conservative alternative social media platforms. Libby Hemphill is with us, associate professor at the University of Michigan School of Information. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you checked out these sites, things like Parler, MeWe, Gab, other conservative social media platforms? Do you think the big name platforms have gone too far when it comes to blocking or labeling posts from President Trump? Or do you think Twitter and Facebook are being responsible in an effort to stop the spread of false information? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett. Right now, we're talking about growing interest in conservative social media platforms, things like Parler and MeWe, especially since last week's election. Users say the more mainstream platforms like Facebook and Twitter suppress conservative speech. Libby Hemphill is our guest, associate professor at the University of Michigan School of Information, and studies social media, political communication, and civic engagement. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Libby, before we go back to callers, it seems like we're pretty good at segregating ourselves off in our own information bubbles in a lot of ways, as it is with Facebook groups and who we follow on Twitter, things like that. If we start to have whole politically separated sites, do you worry that's going to draw us further apart than we already are?
I don't know how much further apart we can get. I worry more about sort of the casual encounters that we have with one another. So I don't worry as much about, like, sort of everybody needs a home where they can go and have conversations that are reinforcing socially, just as a, like, to connect with other people. When that becomes dangerous is when folks are connecting around hatred or discrimination or other sort of socially dangerous ideas and activities. And it is helpful for us to encounter ideas that run counter to our own every once in a while. It's just not helpful for us to be bombarded or threatened by them constantly. So I think we are pretty divided, even in the large platforms.
Let's go back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. Nate is with us in Milwaukee. Nate, hi.
Hi, thank you. I was going to say that I thought it was a good thing whenever Twitter labels something that is likely to be wrong or false. I see plenty of things that are dishonest or misleading on YouTube still, so I'm sure they're not labeling, at least not aggressively. And some of the things just recently relating to this last election I've seen getting passed around that are not true at all. One example was there's a video guy someone put together intending it for it to be a joke where he was pulling out what looked like a Trump ballot and tearing it up and claiming he was a postal worker. But if you look at the guy, and he admitted this, he's wearing what he wears when he works at Amazon, which does not handle ballots. And the entire thing was a fake, but people are claiming it was true.
Nate, thanks a lot for that call. And Libby, we're seeing this again and again. I see a story debunked, and then in my informal observation online, I see it spreading days and even weeks after it's been debunked. Does flagging things like that as possible information, as Twitter does, really make a difference?
Well, I think we talked to before the break about how hard it is to catch up with something that's already out there. And I think what you're mentioning is absolutely true and has been my experience too, that once something's out there, it goes fast, and debunking stories don't go fast or far really at all. And that, I think, is part of why the flag that Twitter provides on tweets is making some difference, because it persists. And so if I retweet it, when you go to see it, it shows up. The flag shows up. And so it's doing something, which honestly is better than nothing, which is what we had even 6 months ago. But I don't know that it's a real answer yet, because it is so hard for the debunking story to catch up with the original problematic story.
Thanks, Nate, for calling in. We'll go to Evan now in Ashland. Evan, hello.
Yeah, sort of the what's my understanding, like, I am in support of at least what I've seen so far on Facebook and Twitter. If you think about it like it was a traditional brick and mortar store, they say somebody walks in and starts saying something that as the owner you disagree with, you don't have to let them stay in your store and speak to your customers, and you especially don't have to give them a megaphone to make their message louder.
Evan, thanks a lot for the call. They're private businesses, he says, and so they have the right to regulate speech as they see fit, Libby.
And I think that's an argument that I have made as well, that when I hear this sort of argument about, oh, they're threatening the freedom of my speech, but like, it's a private place. You don't actually have the freedom to speak there or to say anything you want, like Evan said. I think the other part of the analogy to the brick and mortar store that matters here is that often if you are being obnoxious in a brick and mortar store, even if you're not bothering the owner, if you're bothering the other people there, the owner is probably going to ask you to leave because it's bad for business. And I think that Facebook especially is starting to see that rampant misinformation and rampant hatred is bad for business. Advertisers don't like it and they don't want to be associated with it. And so if Facebook wants to keep making ad money, then they have to clean up a little bit. And Twitter has been protected from that for a while. But is starting to be more exposed to it as they depend more on ad revenue.
Let's go to Hannah now, calling from Madison. Hannah, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to comment regarding the professor's earlier comments about Facebook's role in the genocide in Myanmar. And I think that, Professor, you have an invalid assumption of good faith with Facebook, that the comment was something like that they're, you know, grappling to understand their responsibility in all of this and democracy. But I think if we look at the history of Facebook's action in the world, we see that they actually are very aware and they're choosing to not do anything about it because there's no incentive for them in the capitalist system. And so I think when we're looking at freedom of speech, like the professor just said in the most recent comment, that Facebook, you know, they'll incentivize freedom of speech if it's profitable for them. If it becomes not profitable for them in the future, then they'll change that. And so while I think it's important to talk about, you know, our rights and what's happening and who's getting heard, I think that any sort of, congressional hearing or anything would just be a slap on the wrist. But the actual incentives aren't changing for the corporation.
I gotcha, Hannah. Thanks a lot for the call. Hannah's saying, follow the money with Facebook. Don't assume that they're a good actor, Libby.
I think Hannah's right. I think that makes a lot of sense. And that when I mentioned earlier is that they haven't really learned. And I think that I'm more bullish now on their ability to have a better moral compass than they have had in the past. But Hannah's right that they are a profit motivated company and they're going to make profit motivated decisions.
Thanks for the call, Hannah. Talking about Facebook and Twitter and new conservative leaning social media outlets with Libby Hemphill, professor at the University of Michigan School of Information. Our next caller is Jim, calling from Two Rivers. Jim, hi.
Hey, great show today, as always.
Thank you.
I'm a bit of a conservative, not too much, but I wonder if we would be having this conversation if we had had a normal president in the last 4 years. It's been, we've had technology, we've had social media, but also I wonder if we had a newspaper that was as powerful as Facebook, it would have been broken up by antitrust a long time ago. So I have to think that we're just in the infancy of social media. There's only two platforms. There should be five or six, just like there's five or six or seven good national newspapers. And the young lady who called just now, I so much agree, and I love her, the emotion she has about that. Unfortunately, when we're in the early stages of an industry, especially in media and entertainment, sometimes things get ugly before they settle down.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. Interesting thought that we're kind of in the infancy. This is still pretty new in the scope of things, and Jim's hoping to see more effective competition also with the big players, Libby.
Yeah, and I think both Jim and Hannah's comments relate to Facebook, especially as one of the things that companies that are first movers and had some success tend to do is argue that you ought to throw up barriers that would make it harder for other folks to enter. And that's exactly what Facebook is doing when they say that things like content moderation are so expensive that no one could do them but Facebook. that they try to make it even harder for other players to enter the space that they so effectively occupy. And I think it will be interesting to see what happens in Europe, potentially next week in the congressional hearings. And I think it's interesting that at least one of the Democratic candidates early in the primaries had a break them up plan that Elizabeth Warren wanted us to talk about, but then it didn't get very far. I think it'll be interesting to see whether there is any movement around competition or in addressing their profit motivations, as Jim and Hannah have mentioned.
In our last minute or so, Libby, what are you watching for next as we look at these conservative sites and whether they're going to replace or supplement the big players for more and more people?
I think it will be interesting to see whether they're able to make any money and if folks actually do move rather than just add. So right now we're seeing similar content posted by the same accounts on multiple platforms. And if it starts to be, especially with Parler, if some of these conservative voices really do leave Twitter and go to Parler, I think that would be interesting. And I think I'm curious about what will happen and whether we will become more divided in the spaces and ideas that we discuss.
Libby, thanks a lot for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Libby Hempel is an associate professor at the University of Michigan School of Information. We talked through about a rise in conservative social media sites like Parler, MeWe, and more since last week's election.